grabbing him, soon discovered that the hard way when they lost fingers. The youth was a true albino. His skin was dead white, and ruby-red eyes peered from a cascade of snowy hair. A massive Colt Python 357 jutted from his belt, and at least a dozen leaf-bladed throwing knives were hidden on his person.
"Fools die."
Jack tucked away the leaf-bladed throwing knife, and like magic, another appeared in his hand.
"What else new?"
"I saw Wags on the side of the road."
Dean Cotter held a Browning high-power blaster casually as he watched the horizon for any signs of pursuit.
"Think they might try and come after us?"
"Those wrecks? Even if the Wags worked, they'll be busy squabbling over who's in charge now that we killed their leader."
JB adjusted his wire-rimmed glasses to a more comfortable position.
"Good."
Dean clicked the safety on his blaster with a flick of his thumb. The boy tucked the blaster into his belt. Although only 11 years old, going on 12, Dean already carried himself with the deadly assurance of a seasoned warrior and seemed to look more like his father with every passing day.
"I just thank Gaia they thought a wooden beam would stop us. Could have been a lot worse."
Christy Roth squatted comfortably on the steps leading to the overhead turret, checking the loads in her Smith & Wesson 38. The shapely redhead had lost the blaster in that hellish garage at Front Royal when she'd gotten caught by Overton's sec men. But JB had found the blaster under a bench when he'd done some work on the LAV, the weapon discarded there, apparently, by one of the blue shirts. The neat 38 handled better than the powerful 357, and she was happy to have it once again in hand. Christy was a beautiful woman, her complexion flawless, her abundance of fiery hair gently moving, as if stirred by secret winds only she could feel.
"Those cold hearts could have smashed a hornet's nest against the side of the LAV, and then we would have been in real trouble."
"Hornets?"
Jack paused in his work. A tall man with silver-gray hair was resting against the ammo locker, and raised his head at the conversation, arching an eyebrow.
"Indeed, madam, I do understand. Once the nest hit us, the hornets would target our wag as an enemy and come swarming in through every blaster port and vent. Their painful stings would soon drive us outside, where the others could easily slay us in the confusion."
Wearing a frilly shirt and an outlandish frock coat, Doc Tanner would have been a strange sight even in his own time period, and his resplendent crop of hair made Doc appear much older than he really was. A slim ebony sword stick was laid casually across his lap, and a massive double-barreled blaster jutted from the cavalry gun belt around his waist. The Civil War museum piece seemed incongruous with the rest of his dapper attire. Christy gestured with an open palm.
"Old trick. My mother used it often against the big muties."
The old man pulled a few inches of shiny steel blade from within the ebony stick, then slammed the sword back into its sheath.
"Deuced clever, I must admit."
Ryan glanced over his shoulder at Christy.
"Hornets. Glad you're on our side, lover. That would work even better on folks in an open cart or on horseback."
"Pretty good."
Jack tucked away his whetstone. Biting off a piece of beef jerky, Dr. Mildred Wyeth chewed and swallowed the mouthful before speaking. A stocky black woman with bright, intelligent eyes, her lightweight denim jacket was unbuttoned, showing a heavy flannel shirt and a gun belt supporting a sleek target pistol, the ammo loops on the side of the belt filled with oily brass cartridges. A rare pre-dark field surgery kit holding medical supplies lay protectively between her boots, the canvas lovingly patched here and there.
"For some reason, that reminds me of a war story I once heard. Way back before Skydock, some nation, I forget which, sent a battalion of their best tanks into northern Africa to establish a supply base for their troops. They expected little resistance from the locals as the farmers had almost no technology. They carried stone knives and went hunting with blowguns. It was supposed to be a slaughter, and it was. But for the other side."
"So the tanks got destroyed, eh? Good for the Africans."
"How?"
Dean rested both elbows on his knees and leaned forward. Mildred and Doc came from before Skydark and knew all sorts of things. Some of the information was useful for staying alive, but some was just fun to hear about. Wild stories about things like airplanes and supermarkets. Wrapping the remaining piece of jerky in a clean handkerchief, Mildred tucked the dried meat into a pocket for later. For once, they had plenty of supplies. Front Royal had given them all the food, fuel, and ammo they could carry for this trip. Their mission was too important to chance failure over a can of beans or a handful of bullets. But as her Baptist minister father drilled into her as a child, waste not, want not. Life in the radioactive hell of Deathlands was bitterly harsh, and every morsel of food saved could mean another day of life.
How did they stop the invasion of armored tanks? Simple, really. The locals would run away from the tanks, carefully luring them near the edge of a high cliff. Then, when the tank was in the right position, hunters hidden in the bushes would use blowguns to shoot a poison dart into the tiny slots in the armor that the drivers used to see through. Blind and paralyzed, the soldiers couldn't change course, and the massive machines would roll off the cliff and smash to pieces when they hit the bottom.
A veritable David versus Goliath story.
Good for the hunters.
Dean stole a glance at his father, who was driving.
So the fancier the tech, the easier it is to smash.
Usually, but not always, son.
Everything has a weak point, but sometimes Goliath still wins.
J.B. pulled a fat cigar from the breast pocket of his jacket and placed it in the corner of his mouth.
Sad but true.
Mildred leaned forward in her seat, almost touching noses with the man.
It smells quite bad enough in here with 7 sweaty people packed like sardines. We don't need you adding to the pollution by smoking a 100-year-old cigar.
This is a brand new one. Hand-rolled on the thighs of expert virgins exclusively for the Baron of Front Royal himself.
My dear John Barrymore, expert virgins?
Nice work if you can get it.
As the military transport easily rolled over a low hill, Ryan merely snorted as he shifted gears.
Didn't mean it that way.
Bullshit.
Quizzically, J.B. took a sniff.
Seems to be mostly tobacco. But, yeah, I think there's a little horse in here, too.
Also, makes your breath taste awful.
J.B. winked at the physician and tucked the cigar away.
Don't want that, do we?
Mildly embarrassed, Mildred started to add something, but was cut off when the wag jounced over some rough ground, and the companions were nearly thrown from their seats. Desperately, the friends grabbed for anything welded solidly to the frame of the APC. The interior of the LAV-25 had been badly damaged by fire when its prior owners died, and the seatbelts were only ashen smudges on the bare metal skeletons of the wall seats. Layers of blankets cushioned the seat struts enough for them to sit on for long periods, but every serious pothole threatened to throw them to the floor.
Need rope?
Jack released his grip on the belt of linked 25mm rounds going into the electric cannon in the turret.
Make belts.
Dean massaged a bruised elbow.
Good idea, but we already used it all, tying our extra supplies to the outside.
JB grinned.
Hold on to your ass harder.
Extracting herself from a jumble of fallen supplies, Christy ducked around the ammo belt feeding the machine gun and walked to the front of the wag.
Have we lost the road?
She rested a slim hand on the back of the chair in an effort to stay upright.
10 miles ago.
Ryan concentrated on the task of driving. A strange rustling noise came from the outside as the LAV plowed through some bushes.
We're crossing a field at present, heading straight for a blast crater. JB, give me a rad count.
Quickly, the man checked the pre-dark device pinned to his collar.
No rads. Must have been a clean bomb.
Clean?
Reclaiming her seat, Mildred spoke up.
The isotopes used have a short half-life. There would be no residual radiation remaining after only a few years.
Clean. Right.
Dean pressed his face to a defensive blaster port and saw only a rippled expanse of glass stretching in every direction.
Must have been a big nuke.
No such thing as a small nuclear blast.
Curiously, the boys studied the unearthly landscape surrounding the APC and tried to imagine what the area was like before everything was vaporized in a microsecond flash. Had there been a thriving city here, or a military complex? Or was this a lost strike, a bomb that missed its target and destroyed only woods and fields? There was no way to ever know. Nothing remained but the solid slab of slightly bluish glass. The soil fused crystalline from the extreme heat of the hellish detonation. Distorted objects were almost visible within the translucent material. Broken buildings, forever trapped in the middle of toppling over, and some charred human figures who had spent eternity desperately trying to swim to the surface of the solidified pool. The boy turned away from the blaster port, lost in thought. None of the other companions spoke, the sterile vista outside affecting even these hardened warriors. Hours passed with a low hum filling the wag from the tires under the vehicle as the APC